Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Each week we select from a menu of topics that can impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Rick Gerard, CEO of Stride Search, and fellow radio show podcaster here on OCRadio.net, and with his show Higher Power, to discuss the good, bad, and the ugly when it comes to putting the right people on the bus for your business. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's really interesting, of course, that my audience may not know this, but about a minute ago, you were sitting on my side of the table and doing your show.
Totally higher. Different perspective.
Yeah, so here. So it should be fun. I mean, now you're the guest. When I interviewed Rick Franzi, you know, he's been doing this for 10 years, and here he was sitting on the other side.
Sure.
It made it really interesting.
I had him on my show, too, and it was funny because it was just, it's just like a flashback. It was just weird.
Yeah, it's a weird perspective,
yeah,
right? Because
totally.
He's interviewing us. So before we start, why don't you tell my audience a little bit about you and Stride Search and what you're up to?
Sure. So my name is Rick Gerard. I'm with a company called Stride Search. We are an engaged search firm, which basically is a really nice way of saying we get really in-depth and go all in with our clients, and we make sure that they make the right hire. So it's kind of like a retained search model, only we are running the whole process. So it's kind of a hybrid type model.
Okay. I was going to say, when you're engaged with a client, is it typically in HR? Or are you working with the CEOs and the C-suite?
Yeah, we're usually working with the C-suite.
Okay. You're an executive search firm, is that
correct?
Okay. So
correct. So
that would make sense that you're working with those folks.
Yeah. So we call ourselves a key hire search firm. So usually on the technology, sales, and marketing side is where we tend to play. And we like to really kind of get involved and deal at the executive level, because that's really where the most impact's made.
Okay. And I know we're going to get into some of this as we go on in the interview.
Sure.
But I want to start off this. I asked this question of all my guests. And you're a business owner.
Yeah.
And so when you think about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, man. You know, for me, sometimes what keeps me up at night is, did I bring enough value to my clients on a daily basis? I don't know why, but I'm insecure about that. And I really kind of worry about that sometimes. I don't really worry so much. And that and gosh, am I going to fill this search, which is like the looming everything. Every recruiter feels the same way. Oh, gosh, I took this off. Now I got a big weight on my shoulders that I need to fill this thing.
When people engage with you, are you exclusive, or are they?
Yes.
Okay. So they're not having multiple people compete against you.
We're 100% exclusive.
Okay.
And we're in the trenches with them. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time on site. And we're all in, 100%.
Are you pulling from a database that you've built over the years? So if you're looking for a CEO or a CMO or whatever it happens to be, that you have a place that you start, or are you looking on LinkedIn in a sense and using simple terms here to help try to fill that role?
Yeah, what's interesting is the database used to be king for a long time until we had LinkedIn that came in. So we do pull from a database. I mean, we've got over 500,000. Resumes or candidates in our database, but the fact is that every search is kind of new, so we cross-pollinate between our database and LinkedIn.
Okay.
Because LinkedIn is pretty much where most people are, and it's just a really easy tool to use in order for you to find people.
To find people, right. And I think that's probably the good place to start. And for you out there listening in radio land, it's a good advocation to make sure your LinkedIn is up to date in case Rick comes looking for you.
And podcast land.
And podcast.
Podcast land has cool little flowers.
So based on my experiences, not only for my business and hiring people, but for some of my clients, I've had an opportunity actually to hire a lot of folks for some of my clients. There's a real art to it.
Absolutely.
And yet, you know, I've got a corny phrase here. I don't find a lot of artists in this area. And so, in my opinion, the process that companies go through it without, say, someone in your capacity and helping them through, they're really winging it. And so, in your opinion, what's a good, logical, methodical process that you're looking for someone in that C-suite role they should be looking at?
Well, I think first off, I think I'd probably consider myself the Van Gogh because I'm a little bit crazy as far as that goes. Cut off my ear to make things happen. So the logical process is really first to know who you are, right? And understand who your company is and what you're trying to build as far as your culture goes. Mm-hmm. If you don't know those things, sit on a rock, meditate, and figure it out. Do whatever you have to do, but really understand what you're trying to build as far as the organization goes, not the product, but as far as what the company looks like and the personality of the company, because that's a direct correlation of you. So you have to know kind of who you are as well as who the company is. Then you need to be able to identify what needs to be accomplished. So we approach job descriptions a little differently. It's not about a series of skills that somebody's looking for. It's about, let's talk about what projects need to be accomplished and in what time frame, because that sets performance metrics.
Okay.
And it allows you to have a tool to actually, to judge that person as they're coming in and how well they're performing in their job. And then have a process, have an interview process that's impressive, that's organized. And if you don't know the term, I highly recommend behavioral interviewing. Look it up. There's plenty of companies that teach behavioral interviewing. It gets you to a point with a candidate where you're really getting to the truth of who a person is. And then most importantly, don't ghost people. So finish the process out with people and make them feel good. Make them have a good, as the cliche word is, candidate experience.
Okay. When you say don't ghost people, that means you start the process and they never hear from you again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
It
happens way too often. I mean, unfortunately, I've been in that situation as well. And it's unnerving when you put your heart and soul into, you know, when you're looking for a new career, if you will, or a job. And you start those conversations, then you never hear from anybody again.
Yeah.
And it can play on your ego and your self-confidence.
But it also downgrades your interest level in that company.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah. They tell you you're going to get back to you in a week, and then they don't, and then 2 weeks goes by, and then a month goes by. Now you're totally not interested, and now they're coming back to you saying, well, they want to hire you. It happens a lot, way too often, and it just should never
disappears,
happen.
Disappears, yeah. And then hopefully they don't get a little upset and start posting stuff on Glassdoor and things like that, right?
That happens a lot, too. We have to clean up that.
So you mentioned a couple things that I want to explore a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, you mentioned job descriptions.
Yes.
And again, my experience in working with various companies, the job descriptions have typically just been laundry list of tasks. And even though the ones I've looked at myself, they're just laundry list of tasks.
Totally.
And I've actually been in an experience, and I'll explain that in a little bit, where, you know, I've asked the people that I'm managing, you know, put together a job description, and I realized they just basically went online, they stole somebody's, changed some names,
yeah,
and had really nothing to do with what we needed to accomplish. So let's talk about, what is a good job description? How do you create a good job description to really make sure you're getting the right candidate?
Quick funny story. I went to a client not too long ago, and I looked at their job description. I go, well, where'd you guys get your job descriptions? Like, and they looked at me and they said, well, we just looked at our competitors, we copied it, and we just changed our stuff and put it in there. Bad idea. Bad idea. So job descriptions need to be treated as a marketing document.
Okay, that's interesting.
If you're putting them out there for the world to see, it should be written to attract people. Now, you can have two job descriptions. You can have an internal and an external one, or you can make it one job description. But most importantly, the job description that you put out to the world is meant to attract people, not repel them. And that's what most are pretty repelling, right?
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is they may have a list of qualifications. You have to have this, that, and the other thing. Well, that's a wish list, and it's not necessarily the right answer of what the company really needs. In most cases, most companies don't really know what the job is because they haven't taken the time to figure out what tasks need to be done. So put the care into the job description, because that's your first point of engagement with a candidate. And somebody's going to judge you based on that. Now, if you don't have brand recognition like an Amazon or a Google, what do you have? You have a really crappy job description. So what does that say about your company?
Right. The and who's developing these? I mean, again, if they're not working with you and it's coming from internal,
yeah.
I mean, who should be in charge of really putting these together? And I'll caveat that because, you know, I would say in previous experiences and current experiences, actually, with some of my clients, we go to HR and we ask HR to put job descriptions together. But in my experiences, HR, for example, I'll pick on marketing, have never worked in marketing. They don't understand marketing.
Exactly.
And they're putting together a job description to bring in someone like myself, for example, and they have really no idea what we're trying to accomplish.
I don't think anybody in HR wants to write job descriptions. So why should they?
Okay.
I mean, they have so much other important work that they have to do, and when you give them a job description, people in recruiting probably can write a job description okay, but really, who's responsible for the messaging of the company? It's marketing.
Right.
And so if you can get together with marketing and say, hey, look, I need your twist on this job description. I need you to make this, you know, presentable to the public, that's what you should do.
Is there an approval cycle? I mean, if you're in a sense internally, right? So we'll create a job description right
sure.
now, right? So you're creating a job description for a chief marketing officer, and since there is no current marketing officer, that maybe operations, the CFO, CEO getting involved. So how does that process work to make sure? Because you mentioned another word earlier is about culture.
Yeah.
Right. Is really defining the culture, because it's, do you have the skill set to accomplish these tasks, if you will, but you also have to be able to fit into the culture of the company. So how does that all happen? Again, when somebody's not running roughshod, if you will, like you do in your business.
So what I do is I get together with the CEO, and we develop the kind of brand strategy or the content of what needs to go into it. And then I have a format that I use that's designed to get somebody engaged into being interested, at least in the job description, right? Or in our company. Because we've taken a job description, we've flipped it upside down.
Okay.
So it's not about, you know, if you look at a typical job description, you'll have some fodder on, you know, we're a great company, here's why. Every company does that. And then they have the position details, and then they'll have like the required skills, and then they'll have like at the end all the perks they have, right? And they mm-hmm. think that's the attractor, like that's the flashy lure that's going to attract people. Well, what really people care about, especially people who are actively working, is they care about themselves. They care about solving whatever problems they have in their current role.
Right.
So the job description really does nothing to address any of that, other than somebody might go, you know, it might be cool to work at this company, Google, right? I've heard about them. So, you know, I'll send them my resume.
So if I heard you correctly, and if I have, it's really interesting. If not, I'm going to put it on the table anyway.
All right.
Is the job description is really, and again, and I'm thinking here as we're talking, they are laundry lists. But I can't actually recall seeing a job description that says, you know, again, we've had these problems, or these are the things that we're trying to accomplish, or we're trying to grow into a new vertical, and really kind of lay out that strategic part of it in the job description to make sure that they have the vision and the capabilities to achieve that.
Yeah, not much of them do a good job of that. I mean, that's part of brand messaging or branding, right?
Right. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
There's a term that's pretty popular right now. It's employer branding, which a lot of people are focusing a lot of time and resources into is employer branding. But it's great for larger companies or companies that are on the uptick, but smaller companies don't have that ability, right?
Just bandwidth.
Yeah.
More capabilities, too, actually.
And those are the ones that need to attract the talent the most, because their lifeline is on the line.
Describe employer branding.
So employer branding is utilizing, I'm not a marketing guy, utilizing various channels to make sure that people are aware of who your company is.
Okay. So
what they're doing is they're actually like really focusing on building awareness in and around the company.
Okay. So it's really, if you're looking at an organization that's trying to attract, again, I'll use myself as CMO, is making sure that the channels that I'm living in, my job journey in a sense, making sure that, you know, the company is promoting themselves so I have an understanding of who they are, how they're positioned, their differentiators.
And
I think differentiators is pretty key, especially in job descriptions, because, you know, why do I want to work there? What's that, you know, so
but
they're not just cookie cutter stuff,
here's
why
I feel
right?
Job descriptions miss the mark, though, is because, quite frankly, having differentiators, what's important to you is not important to me, right? Maybe two totally different things. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to put together an overall generalized message that effectively might attract me. You're hoping that it might attract me, but it doesn't really address any of my pain points.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So the other thing that kind of bugs me a little bit when I think about hiring.
Besides me?
Besides you. is the interviewing process.
Oh, God, yeah.
I have sat in, I have been interviewed, and I have interviewed, and I've sat with other people while they interviewed, and I find that a lot of folks come unprepared.
Yep.
They haven't researched it, and they don't necessarily understand the job that they're interviewing for. So I worked with a company as a fractional chief strategy officer job, and during that process, I actually inherited HR and talent acquisition. And making it simple, we were setting up these interviews. I was talking to the talent acquisition lady who was in charge of the marketing hires, and she basically came to me and said, "Can you teach me about marketing?" And I was like, "Oh, I can't believe, and you're the person interviewing. You have no idea anything about marketing, right?" So it seems, and I've been in these other interviews where just the people that are interviewing just don't seem to have the skill set or the understanding of how to conduct that interview.
So having an interview structure is highly critical, especially when you're trying to attract the person that you want. So in this market, in this landscape, you have 2.9% unemployment. You have a lot of job dissatisfaction, and yet there are people actively out there interviewing. The person that you need to hire could most likely get turned off by your whole interview process because of the fact that it's just like the other 17 interviews they've just been on.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm gonna throw out Amazon as a prime. Like, if anybody ever has the opportunity to look into Amazon's interview process, they're arguably the most successful company in the world. And they've built their interview process from years and years ago based on they hire specifically for congruence with their core company values. And the way in which they discover it is primarily through behavioral interviewing. So I'm going to throw that one out again.
Okay.
But when you conduct an interview based on what your resume says, or when you conduct an interview that's similar to the other 17 the interviews that person went on, you're not differentiating yourself in any sort of way that's going to attract that person to you. So if you do something different, and also there's a lot of assumptions and biases that are built into that whole process that are dangerous as far as making a wrong hire. You know, you might have somebody interview somebody, he's got a friend in the process, and he's adversarial in the interview process, right? He wants his friend to have the job. These kind of things happen all the time. So you can have anybody, you don't have to teach that person about marketing. All you have to do is teach that person how to do a behavioral interview that's judging that person against your core company values.
Okay.
And then judging that way.
That's interesting. All right. And that kind of gets around the idea of having that skill set in the as an interviewer.
Yeah.
So you've said it twice now, maybe three times. Behavioral?
Behavioral interviews.
Interviewing. Okay,
yeah.
I've got to ask, and give me a few minutes on it.
Yeah. So behavioral interviewing is really judging people for, I'll say judging, but there's a better way of saying it, but judging people against your core company values based on evidence of past performance or things that they've done in the past. So a good example of a behavioral interview question might be, explain to me about the time you had a difficult customer. right? And you start there. So somebody will tell you about the difficult customer, and then you're going to have them walk you through the process of why it was difficult, how it was difficult, what specifically they did to solve the problem. Did they think about any other approaches? Why did they handle it that way? So what you're doing is you're looking for evidence of how somebody works and how somebody's values kind of play into how they work, right? And then that goes into kind of your decision-making process from the perspective of, okay, this person handles customers the way we like to handle customers.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there a rule of thumb? I mean, I'm listening to this, and I'm going back by 8 years now or something like that, where I was interviewing for a director of sales and marketing job at a company in Los Angeles, and I went to 7 interviews. So individually and group, and then the got down to me and one other person, and they said, now that you've been here for literally, it was like 2.5 months later, we want you to come back and tell us how we can fix all the problems we've talked about over the last 2.5 months, and you've got 5 minutes to do it. I had never had that happen before, and it was really interesting. We had a 10 slides kind of thing to compete for this job in 5 minutes to really communicate.
So the world is not like that anymore.
Okay.
I mean, it should. Candidates, though. Okay, so there's a lot of companies that were giving tests, right? Like, so you might be approached by a company. They say, hey, we'd like to talk to you. Here's a test. Do this test first. Do this coding test, and then we'll get back to you and let you know if you want an interview. So if I'm a person who's working and I'm busy, am I going to sit down on my free time and do a test for a company that I'm really not even interested in? So I think that the mindset of the candidate is what drives the market now.
Okay.
It's not what companies want. And candidates will walk away in a heartbeat from a company. You're just one of, you're a commodity. I mean, like, you're one of 100 companies that are calling them. So why make it difficult for them why make it easy for them to say no to you?
Okay, makes sense.
What you're doing.
I can't believe this. We're actually coming down to the end. It's really blew by, right? So I want to ask one more question, or actually there's two more, and we'll do them quick.
Mm-hmm.
One is about onboarding.
Mm-hmm.
My experience that a lot of the companies that I've worked with over the years, their onboarding process is weak, right? They go through all this process. They do all this. I'll go back to my own one that I was describing a minute ago. I mean, 2.5 months, I land this job, and basically, they put me in a room and said, go to it.
Yeah, you got to show people where the bathroom is. So I'm not an onboarding expert, but what I do know is that, you know, the continuation of the interview process, if you've done things right, needs to continue on through their tenure at the company, right? That just sets up the whole scene for how things are going to play out in your organization. If you just kind of throw them to the wolves, I had a guest on my show what she did was, she's an HR, phenomenal HR person for tech company. And what she would do is assign each person a buddy. And that buddy would be from a different department, totally unrelated. But what it did was it kind of promoted that camaraderie, and it gave them an outside kind of person to talk to. And they would be responsible. They'd take them out to lunch the first day I was on the company. And they would effectively just kind of make sure and check in with them and make sure they're doing well. You know, the job description, actually going back to that, builds in accountability, and then you can just take it from there.
That makes a lot of sense. And I actually had recommended that recently to a client, that whenever the new hires come on, that they start shadowing their counterparts to really kind of get immersed in the company. You talked about that earlier. You do that with your clients. I mean, you have to get immersed. I do that with mine. Otherwise, you know, we can't consult. We can't make recommendations if we don't understand who they are. There's a real quick statistic, and you talked about it, alluded to it, but 85% of the workforce in America is disengaged, which is having a huge impact on productivity. A recent statistic I saw was 34% of new hires are quitting their jobs in the first 90 days.
Yep.
So if that
has to do with onboarding.
It's all onboarding, right? Yeah. Because they
figure out they're in the wrong seat.
Okay.
You know, what's interesting is years ago, people would just stay in the job and go, oh, well, I don't want to look bad on my resume that I've only been here for, you know, 30 days. But now people don't care. They're like, I just won't put it on my resume. I was on vacation for 3 months.
3 months, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty pretty sad that it's changed that. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. How much time do I have over there, Mr. Engineer? 1 minute? All right, so I'm going to sum it up. I'm going to skip my last question, which means I'm going to have to bring you back on the show at another time. So
I'm here.
So, Rick, why don't you tell the listeners how they can contact you, your website, email, about your show?
Yeah, absolutely. I can be reached at Rick, R-I-C-K, at StrideSearch, StrideSearch.com. Or you can check out my podcast, which is Higher Power Radio. That's HirePowerRadio.com. And or you can give me a call. I'm at 949-777-5656. I'm approachable anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation. Went by really fast. But this is really important out there because it does have a huge impact on your growth. So thank you again for joining us at the cafe. You can find out more about me and read my blogs and view my videos at theponzigroup.com. You should know how to spell that by now. Or connect with me on LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to my show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com. Or we are now on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and Streaker, and coming soon to iHeartRadio and SoundCloud and other platforms around the world. Ooh. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.